Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack, but I want to go back just to the beginning for a sec, because you made a very wise decision that most Americans don't make, and you bought multifamily right away. Because, you know, most times in, you know, in our communities, it's like we save enough money to buy the home that we can afford, yeah, or the dream home that we think we can afford, and we realize later that we can't. But you started with multifamily right away. Was that the strategy all along, as you had been seeing people do that as a way of having passive income?
Yeah, that was definitely my objective, in that we wanted to, you know, when you think about it, right, the fundamental equation is this. Most people buy into that American dream, right? Where, you know, if you take a person, they go out and buy a home, they save all their money, they buy a single family home, they move into it. For the next 30 years, most of their disposable income is going to pay that mortgage. That's it. But if they just did something a little bit differently, buy a couple of income generating assets first, right? In the case I was talking about, when I bought my first multifamily, I mean, that was making me between $800 and $1,000 a month. So they call it $1,000 a month. If you're making 60 grand and you buy a multifamily house and you can make yourself an extra $1,000 a month, you've given yourself a 20% raise, mm-hmm, right? And you can do that repeatedly. And the more assets you have that are generating income for you, the easier it is to buy your next one and your next one, right? It's like getting off of that point of inertia. But if you choose to buy a single family home and move into it, I think, you know, it's not as lucrative and it's not the wealth generating instrument that investment properties are.
So let's get into this real estate development conversation. For somebody that's looking to become a real estate developer right now, right, what advice would you give them in order to, because I understand that it's not necessarily easy to get into the game, and it's all about relationships a lot of times. So what advice would you give to somebody that's looking to become a real estate developer?
So the first thing is just learn the equation, right? Because you could do the equation on a multifamily, three family, which most people can have a level of access to. But it's that same equation, that same the same mechanics that go into doing a development deal. Granted, the variables change a little bit because if you get into development, you have to take on some different risks. But you're basically buying an asset. You're investing money in it. You're starting with a multifamily, like a three family. You're going to learn things like how to do maintenance, right? When that toilet gets backed up, you're going to learn something about plumbing. You're going to learn something about electrical. And folks should not be scared to, you know, take on the challenge, because everything you learn increases your knowledge base. And when the more knowledge you have, the more you're able to monetize your situation. So, you know, I would encourage folks to start small. So start with an operating property first, right? A multifamily. Learn the mechanics. Down the road, you may want to say, you know, I'm going to buy a brownstone or some other home that you can actually renovate and reposition. Everyone watches HGTV and those kind of things. You see people doing flips. That's another aspect of, you know, in real estate investing, real estate development, that is achievable and accessible for most people. But if you do that, you learn how to, you know, contract with an electrician, how to get the plumbing redone in the house, how to, you know, get a new roof put on, all the things that you basically do when you develop, but you're learning it in a little bit of a safer scenario. And once you, you know, you go from crawling to walking, you can run.
Yeah. So that crawling process, I'm imagining now as you're interning for free, right? You're saying, can I help this firm? Take us through that process of what you're learning, what are you seeing, the negatives and positives of this space that you're now in, and to that moment where you now see your name at the bottom of the bet, and you're like, wait, my name needs to be next to the bigger figures on this. What's that process like for you?
You mean going from just like starting to learn? Well, it's really just desire, man. Like, you know, really wanting to learn it. You think about what this opportunity represented for me was, you know, to actualize a dream and being an entrepreneur. And so I was intent on learning everything. So, you know, why I stayed with that developer for free for 2 years, because I wanted to learn and I wanted to soak up everything like a sponge. So my background is in finance. I have 2 degrees in finance, a bachelor's and a master's, and I worked as an investment banker. So I came to the table with really strong financial acumen. So the, you know, the math in real estate is simple math. And it's, you don't have to be an investment banker. You don't have to have an MBA to do it. It's simple math, because the income is generated from people paying rent. You have operating expenses and you have cash flow. It's really a simple equation. Development goes a little bit deeper, because you have to take something that's not generating any income and put it through a process where you're going to borrow some capital, both debt and equity. You're going to hire an architect, maybe do some entitlement work so that you can have the right zoning or whatever you need to build. Then you're going to go through the process of actually constructing something. A little bit more risky, but once you get your wheels under you, you can do this. And so learning all of those different aspects, you know, the financing component, being very focused on project management. So making sure the our plans were getting done on time, and, you know, the legal documents that we needed around developments were also moving along and are structured properly. There's a lot of engagement in what I do now with municipalities, because when we're developing affordable housing, it can't be done without the participation and the support of government. And so there's a lot of what I think is undue bureaucracy in some markets that you have to contend with, but then there are other markets that are easier to function in. And that is why, as a company, we chose to expand out of New York City into several other markets where there really is tremendous demand for housing, both, you know, market rate, moderate income, and, you know, affordable housing as well.
So can you walk us through the development of a building? It could be in New York or out of New York. I know there's RFPs, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have to get the financing.
Right.
Then, like you said, you have to get the architect, and you got to go through the permit process. So yeah, can you kind of walk us through step by step?
So let's start with a blank piece of dirt. Okay. So you have a piece of dirt, let's call it in Brooklyn. Okay. And it's in a neighborhood that's turning over and is improving. And I, as an investor, believe, you know what? I can put a building on that piece of dirt, call it 50 units and make money, right? So the process is, first of all, I see that piece of dirt. The first thing I want to do is what's called a zoning analysis. I want to understand, what's the size of a building I could put on there? Can I actually put 50 units? Is it 55 units? Is it 60? Is it 45? I don't know. So an architect would be engaged. They'd conduct a zoning analysis. And what it does is reads the zoning code, and every municipality in the country has a zoning code. And it interprets the zoning code, and it gives you right there in a 2-3-4 page report exactly what could be built, how high it could be, where the setbacks have to be, you know, how many dwelling units can be in that building, the size of every dwelling unit. So all these very technical features are codified in a document. So you can take that zoning analysis now and now go build a financial model, right? And that financial model is going to say, look, I have these 50 units. Some are studios, some are one bedroom, some are two bedrooms, and they generate X amount of income, right? That the amount of income they generate has to also be further reduced by the operating expense. So the superintendent has to clean the building, or, you know, service the residents. The porters have to take the garbage out and shovel the snow off the front steps. You have to pay for electricity in the common areas. You have to pay your real estate taxes, or whatever it is. So you do a financial model and you see, you know, the revenue you can generate, the expenses associated against that project. And then what kicks out of that is what we call net operating income. That net operating income is what is used to service the debt, the mortgage on the building, right? So you can see, just from a pro forma, what NOI the building produces, and that NOI will tell you how much debt you can raise. So you also want to have a project that, of course, can support the debt. So you know how much debt it could support. Now you look at, well, how much debt do I need to build it? And you're going to say, you know, a 50-unit building, when you become a little bit more seasoned, you kind of know what construction costs are. But for folks who aren't, you can literally take your plans, talk to a builder, say, hey, I'm building this building. It's going to be block and plank, or it's going to be poured in place concrete, steel frame, whatever construction methodology your structural engineer recommends. And you get a cost, right? A cost projection for building the building. So that building, we'll just use some numbers, right? That, let's say, to acquire the land and to build everything is going to be $10 million. And let's say a $10 million is at 6% interest rate. So you know every month that's how much your mortgage payment has to be on that asset. So that NOI has to be in excess of that debt coverage, that debt number. We call that a debt service coverage ratio. So that DSCR probably needs to be minimum about 1.25. So meaning you want to have 125% of that mortgage number in your NOI. So you can comfortably cover the debt service. And then when you pay the debt service, the rest of it inures to cash flow.
So when you're looking for, let's say, that plot of dirt, what, like, are you doing a market analysis to see, like, all right, we're actually looking for a place to invest in this borough or in this city prior to it? Or are we, you know, looking at past investments that are going up in the neighborhood to say, all right, this is an opportunity for us to now create?
No, that's actually a great question. So what you're really doing is you know, when you're looking at that particular opportunity, you're doing it, so you're looking at it because there's probably something else already going on in that neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. And what we do is what's called a comp study. So I can call a real estate broker and say, give me a comp study for this zip code. So they're going to say, Craig, I'll email you this report, and it'll have you know, 5 buildings, 10 buildings that are renting up in and around the neighborhood, and it'll show me what the rents are in those buildings. So I can have a reasonable expectation as to what types of income are generated off that asset. Now, in some markets that we call transitional markets, it's not so clear, but you're taking a bet because, let's say, something fantastic is going on in that market, like they're bringing in a new train station, or they're building a new stadium, and there's a reason why I believe there's going to be a lot of demand for real estate in that area. So we will, make an analysis and do an investment based on that. But in my business, since we do affordable housing, here's the thing. Affordable housing is real estate it's real estate, but it's really a hybrid. It's really structured finance, right? Because we are offering units to rent at below market rate. So it almost doesn't matter what the market is, because if a two bedroom is say 3,000 in that market, I could bring it to market for like say 1,600, 1,800, a tremendous discount to make it much more affordable. And the demand for affordable housing is insatiable. We cannot build enough of it. I have to tell y'all, right now, in 2022, almost 2023, we have a 7 million unit housing deficit in this country. 7 million units. That means we could build for the next 10 years. We'd have to build for the next 10 years across the country just to satisfy that demand. And guess what? In 10 years, we're going to find out there's even more demand that occurred. And just to quantify that, 7 million units of housing is about $2.5-3 trillion of an economic opportunity. That's why our community has got to get on real estate, because you know, you could get your feet in. Not all of it's going to be, you know, 1,000-unit portfolios that are built in public-private partnerships. A lot of it will be people who choose to, you know, buy a plot of land in the city or take a vacant land that the city is RFPing and, you know, build a 3-family or 4-family home on it. There's a lot of opportunity there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.